I'm Jeannie Holzbacher, and on behalf of myself and my fabulous co-host, Jill Wright, we want to welcome you to Executive Shine, Conversations That Count. We search the planet to bring you some of the most dynamic leaders in various industries who often only have one thing in common: uncommonly outrageous positive impact on people and businesses. They are leaving this world a much better place. So kick back and join us. Grab a few insights you can immediately apply to leverage your leadership and foster greater connection in a world that's become increasingly disconnected. They so desperately need you to shine your light bright. Cheers. All right. While Jill's dancing away, I'd like to welcome you all to yet another episode of Executive Shine, Conversations That Count. And Jill was the one scouring once again.
Yes.
And she discovered Mr. Matt Gersper. HappyLiving.com is his site. And he is all about being happy and learning to discover happiness. And he has a lot to share with us tonight. He has a very, very specific formula. And guys, I hit him up before here. I hit him up. I'm like, who is this for? And I'll let him answer that in a few minutes. But you're going to discover that there's a pretty good chance it's for you listening in tonight. So, Jill, how did you discover Mr. Matt, the happy guy?
Well, I was so fortunate to be in this book with Matt. And I have met some of the most phenomenal people in this book, Codes of Longevity. And we will hear a little bit more about that later. But one of the most powerful things that Matt has created is this formula. And part of it is really coming to that connection with yourself. And that is why I love him so much, is that he really has a formula with how to get in touch with who you are and what inspires you and what makes you want to create an exciting life.
So Matt, how and where did this all start?
Oh my goodness. I guess it started June 4th, 1961.
Amen.
But Happy Living started down in the bottom of the Grand Canyon, or on the way down on my second annual trip, hiking down the Grand Canyon, to stay at the bottom of the canyon overnight at this cool place called Phantom Ranch that's so busy that you have to book like a year, year and a half in advance just to get a bunk bed in a dorm. It's crazy. And this time I went down my second year, I had just moved out of operations in an international trade company that I owned and operated along with a few other investors. And I'd moved into the chairmanship, and I was looking at reducing my day-to-day role in the company more to be oversight and industry leadership and the stuff that I wanted to do, but not full time. And I was trying to figure out, well, what was I going to do next? Because I really believe that human beings are made to work. Financially, I didn't need to work, but emotionally, spiritually, and every other way, you got to work. So I was just thinking about what's next. And there was a couple of catalysts that led me to Happy Living, but I'll just share one with you in the interest of time. As I was moving into the chairmanship and we were reshuffling our deck, we had a chance. The company offered to buy us. It was like the third offer in about three or four years, something like that. And we were making so much money and the business was working so well. I was flying around the country, meeting with our investors, explaining to them that there's no way you can make more money from the sale of our company and investing in the stock market than you're going to make next year. So I was trying to keep the company together. And in one of my trips up to Portland, I met with an old high school friend, unrelated to the business. My son was there also. And so Kevin and Kyle and I went out to dinner just after I had some investor meetings, and we were just talking about life. And my friend is a successful businessman, married to the woman of his dreams, They had a baby that they had to work hard to get. He had the life, you know, life by the tail, you could say. But he said to my son at least 12 times during our conversation, you know, Kyle, your dad and my glory days are behind you. Now, Kevin and I were about 54 at the time. And I'm thinking, dude, I'm just getting started. And so that got me really thinking about why do I think differently than others? And when I was hiking down the trail, the canyon, that was what was on my mind. What can I do in my trade business? I worked on developing best practices to make corporations operate better in their international trade part of their business. And I thought, well, can we do best practices for happy living? And can we, you know, kind of research and explore and experiment things that worked for me and then share them with others? And so that was kind of the idea was developing a business that was other oriented, that was not B2B. All I'd ever done is help businesses, but was B2C to really help people. And I had a realization also that, you know, if in the second half of my life, after I've have been fortunately successful in business, if I could just help one person, maybe in my family, to live a better life, that should be quite a lot and quite enough. And so that was, you know, that was the start of it all. It was kind of figure out what can I do to give back in terms of the mindset of being happy, being fulfilled.
So that's quite a shift to go from, you know, the investing and doing, having the success of business that way, to do more of a personal development route. When you look back in the first half of your career and your life, what is it that when you, and you're looking at the happy formula and the things you do now, did you find that in the first part of your career where you had all this business success that people were happy as a general rule?
I'm a strange creature, and you know, I can remember as a kid, I was always walking around with a smile on my face, and I'd know people stopped me. Why are you always smiling? And my response was, why not? You know, I've had this engagement with life forever for reasons that, well, I guess I do know, and I can share that with you. But it wasn't, so yes, I mean, I saw the world as happy all the way through. And I didn't see people always being happy. Of course not. And I don't today. I see there's a lot of people that are struggling today. So that hasn't really changed for me. What's changed for me is my focus is less. I'm trying to make my focus to be less on me and looking good and selling books. And, you know, I caught myself several times. Well, we need to be selling more books. What are you talking about? It might be appropriate for you to say, we need to find more readers, because I think maybe the books can help somebody. You know, that's where I want to get. But it's a retraining, and it's going to be a life, my lifetime mission to get there.
We understand that. We understand retraining and unlearning quite well. Mm-hmm. Here we are, probably at our midway mark, and we're finding a lot of the same thing. It's unlearning isn't always so, it's simple, but it's not always easy.
No.
But you have, Jill had mentioned before that you had a three-part formula called the Happy Formula. Can you tell us what the first part is?
Capacity.
So break down the capacity piece a little bit. What does it mean to build capacity?
So when I started Happy Living, then you asked me pre-show, you know, who's Happy Living for? And I confessed, as a businessman, I know you're supposed to have a nice tight niche. I sell yogurt on the corner of 5th and Main, you know, for nuns because it's near the church. That's a good niche, right? That's something I could really sink my teeth into. When I did Happy Living, I said, I wanted to improve the health and well-being of the world, one person at a time. That's our mission. And I changed it along the way that now we want to improve the happy of the world one person at a time means the same thing. We're just playing with happy. But what I did do to try to constrain what we could write about, research about, experiment with, I came up with this pyramid that has 7 blocks, 4 blocks in the bottom, 2 blocks in the middle, and a block on top. And the 4 blocks in the bottom, this is where capacity comes in. I didn't realize it when I created them, but they are physical fitness, mental fitness, spiritual fitness, and financial fitness. Over time, I'll finish the other box. The other two, the 2 blocks in the middle, love and adventure, and the block on top, significance. And so the rule that I brought to the company was everything we do, everything we touch, everything we write about has to fit in the pyramid. If you come to me and say, you know, the oceans are getting polluted and it's a terrible political situation and we need your help, I'm going to say, that is great. Maybe I can give you some money, but it's not a part of happy living. It doesn't fit in the pyramid. So that's what we did. We started working and writing, mostly writing in the pyramid. And over time, what I learned is, those fitnesses at the bottom, I call them the 4 fitnesses. Those are my fitnesses. Those are the things that I do to make myself as capable as I can be, to take good care of myself and my family, and to have something left over so I can be a giver, so I can give to others. And I learned just a couple of years ago when B.B. King died, and I was always a fan of B.B. King's, and I was thinking about my definition of capacity, taking care of yourself and giving to others, and my vision of capacity, fit and health and eating right and all that, and B.B. King. He didn't, I don't think he was very physically fit, and he certainly didn't, I don't know him. I don't think he ate very good, according to my standards, in quotes, but he had incredible capacity. He lifted the entire world's spirit whenever he played Lucille, and he brought joy and entertainment to life, and he met every single part of capacity building that I could ever imagine, taking care of yourself and have more to give to others. And so I realized that, wait a second, those 4 blocks are my blocks, and that's not important to anybody else. What is important is to have your own blocks. What's missing on my blocks is like emotional fitness. And, you know, my kids might say, well, that's because you're a robot, Dad. You don't have any emotion. So it really should be very personal for who you are and what you want in life. And then what do you need in terms of capacity to take care of yourself and to give to others?
That's awesome. I have a saying, what does love look like here? And that's kind of the same thing. What does capacity look like for you? And how does it support your life in a way that enables you to have love and adventure and enables you to create significance in the world? That's beautiful.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, though, when I'm looking at your 4, physical, mental, financial, and spiritual, I realize you said emotional wasn't in there, and that would be for me. But these are some pretty good foundationals, because it seems to me, if you don't have, for me, spiritual is the foundation, and that's the core upon which everything else is built. But it doesn't matter how great my spirit's doing if I can't move because I'm not physically fit. So they almost, one of my mentors, tell me what you think about this, you guys, both of you. One of my mentors said, how you do one thing is how you do everything. I remember coming to him and saying, I'm really good in these 3 areas, but I'm struggling in this one. And his response back was, how you do one thing is how you do everything. Can you guys speak to that?
So I have a little different take on that. And especially as it relates to capacity. So for example, B.B. King's capacity was probably really, really big in creativity and maybe spirituality, and less so in physical fitness. I was an athlete. So, you know, my life has always been about heavy on physical fitness, and I confess less on emotional intelligence and fitness maybe. And I also, when I was discovering this capacity concept and my, the selfishness of my labeling the blocks the way I did, and then learning that it's really just about capacity. I also stumbled upon Bette Davis. Bette Davis, the famous actress, she once said, they asked her about smoking. She says, well, something along the lines, if I didn't have a cigarette in my mouth, then I wouldn't be Bette Davis. And what I've learned is when you are engaged in doing you, Bette Davis smoking, B.B. King playing Lucille, me doing my fitness stuff, when you are engaged in doing you, you compensate for other things in your life that might take you down. Bette Davis lived in her late 80s. B.B. King into his, I think he almost died on stage. I mean, he literally played his entire life. So when you're engaged, I think you tap into the inner spirit that is you. And that overcomes all kinds of things that should take you down. That's what I think.
Yeah. And I agree. I think that there's an aspect of how you do one thing is how you do everything, but it's whether you do it with your whole heart and soul engaged in it. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason that we're successful is because we are all different. And your piece of the puzzle looks very different than my piece of the puzzle. So for me, how you embrace your gifts to the world is your gift to the world, is how you show up. And you know what I say about leadership is, like, I feel like I'm a conductor of an orchestra, and every different aspect of the orchestra is important, and we are not at all the same. And the capacity of the person playing the saxophone in their lungs is very different than, let's say, the person playing the drums or something. So we all have different gifts. And I think when you say how you do everything, my answer would be, do you do it wholeheartedly?
Yeah.
And I think it's important that you don't, that you don't put restrictions on yourself, like having to be good at everything. I can catch myself judging my own self. For example, I am not a tech, I call it an emerging technological person. And because I don't want to talk negative about myself, but if I beat up on myself for not having that as one of my strengths, then I think I diminish myself where in my other gifts, like my gifts are more in the areas of EQ and that, because I have a passion for people and they fascinate me and I have an unquenchable curiosity. So I think that when you live to your full expression,
yep,
that's when your life is fulfilling, which is what you're saying too about the whole happy formula.
That's the magic. And I think one of the ways that we've got twisted up in life is, and I don't know exactly when it happened, but the you know, we went in our culture, we went from doctors being generalists, and they walked around the country and they fixed you and they answered all your problems and they did everything, to becoming highly specialized. And we started broadcasting prescriptions for the way everybody's supposed to live. You eat your food this way, you have, you know, TV dinners, and we started marketing, this is how you're supposed to be: thin, smart, tall, go to college. And it's not true. We're not supposed to all be the same. And that created a lot of internal conflict for all of us that weren't that picture. And none of us were that picture. Even the ones that were the picture weren't that picture. So I think we're coming out of it now. So we're creating things like functional medicine. What's that all about? That's individualized medicine based on you as a single person, not based on, you know, most people who come in with a nose dripping, I just give them an antihistamine and off you go. No, the functional medicine doctors, they want to know, why is your nose dripping? There's a cause for that. And your cause for Jill's might be different than Jeannie's might be different than mine. And all of us would need a different solution. And what we've been taught is we all get the same solution.
Absolutely. I love that.
I think that's where judgment comes in. Way too much judgment. There is such a thing as a righteous judgment. There are some things, there are some things that are very wrong. But that's different than saying, because you're not living your life the way I am living it, that makes you wrong. Right. And boy, that doesn't just cause internal conflict. I'm telling you, it can cause some external conflict as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, Happy, now you have to understand something. The industry I work in is hospice. So I'm an executive, a healthcare executive. I used to be at the bedside. I've seen well over 100 deaths attended. And so I don't always see people happy, but what I found is they can have an incredible capacity for joy in spite of the circumstance. Mm-hmm. And I think of Viktor Frankl's book, Man's Search for Meaning. When he was in the concentration camp, one of the things he said is, it's not suffering that's so hard on us. It's the absence of being able to find meaning in it.
Yeah.
You had building capacity as number one to the happy formula. Don't leave us hanging. What's number two?
You just mentioned Viktor Frankl. I've just been talking about him for my for my e-course. And what got him through three different concentration camps over 3 years, when all of his family, except for his sister, was either killed or died in camps. And he came out of it, I mean, seemingly unscathed, and wrote a book like the year after Man's Search for Meaning. And what it was is he discovered his purpose for being there, and he focused like a laser beam on that purpose. And so what I discovered with Love and Adventure, my original pyramid blocks, those evolved over my time and thinking and experimenting and playing with happy living. The reason for those is to discover your purpose. And so when I talk about love, romantic love is certainly important. I finally found my one true love in my second marriage, and it's awesome when that happens. But it's other kind of love too. Love of family and friends and pets. My beautiful dog Barkley just, you know, is awesome for my life. Love of doing. You know, when people say, I love what I do. Well, that's incredible. If you love what you do, you're going to be a lot happier, I can guarantee you, than if you don't love what you do. And that might be working, it might be playing, it might be whatever ing you have. You should try to find more things that you love doing. And the more of those you can bring into your life, the happier you're going to be. Love of places. Sadly, I mean, I'm watching what's going on in my beautiful New York City. I love that place. And I love Sedona, Arizona. That's where I met my wife, and that's where we got married. And so when you go to those places, or when you, I love my house. We created this house based on what my wife and I wanted to do for the second half of our life. And I love being here. So that's all very uplifting. And adventure. When I do, adventure can be white water rafting, which I've done quite a few times and love it. And sometimes it's, you know, you're on the edge of danger and it's extra, you know, kind of, it just gets you going. But it can also be reading. It can be watching a documentary. It can be, you know, anything that takes you away from your day-to-day mindset of, I got to do this A, B, C, and D, and I'm relaxed and I'm engaged in a different way, learning about life. And I find when I'm involved in love or adventure, that's when I can feel inspiration hit me. And that inspiration that I used to think is coming from out there, I now believe it's coming from in here. It's something is catching my spirit. And that's really important. And I got to pay attention to that. And the more I can do of that, the more I can live in my purpose, then the happier I'm going to be.
Oh, I love that. That's my word for 2021 is life giving, because we had kind of a life sucking or a life teaching in 2020. So I really wanted to engage life giving. And that's what you're saying, is to focus on those things that stir the life within you. Ooh, I love that.
100%.
You know, one capacity that I think of when it comes to happy living for me, again, I'm not going to put this on anybody else. We brought up Viktor Frankl. One of my heroes is Corrie Ten Boom. And when she got out of her concentration camp, she lost everyone in her family. And her sister, Betsy, as she was dying in her arms, says, "You've got to get out, Corrie. You've got to get out." Why? Because you've got to tell people that there is no pit that is so deep that our faith in God is not deeper still. And so Corrie gets out. She's a little bitter, angry. She works through some stuff. She starts speaking at churches. She goes to speak on forgiveness. Mm. And afterwards, out in the auditorium, people are coming up to meet her. And all of a sudden, a gentleman puts his hand out, and it's a voice she recognizes very well. And he says, "That was a wonderful talk on forgiveness, Fräulein." And she looks up into the eyes of the prison guard that she had to walk past naked every single day. Mm. And she had to ask herself in that moment, do I really believe what I just said in there, mm-hmm. or don't I? And that took her a minute. She decided she did, and she took his extended hand. And I think, you know, that's an incredible capacity to forgive.
Yeah.
That doesn't just come. That's something you cultivate.
Yeah. And, you know, I would just add to that, too. So great for her. I don't know her story, but great for her to have the capacity to forgive him. But what I notice in my life is we have a hard time forgiving ourselves.
Oh, yes.
And I was writing a blog post, this was several years ago, and I hope I can remember the quote properly. It said, total acceptance of self brings about total transcendence of self.
Right.
And I thought about that, and it was the first time, you know, like in my life, said, yeah, that's nuts. Why don't we totally accept ourselves? That's crazy. We are who we are, right?
But we don't
accept ourselves. And if we just started there, just totally accept who you are. Another song I remember, "God Didn't Make a Mistake on Me." Can't remember the ladies, I can't remember her name, but you know, there's a reason that we are where we are, why we are. And if we just accept it and go from there, it makes your life so much easier. But it's back to what you said earlier, genius judge. We judge the hell out of ourselves all the time. And we're way more forgiving to others.
True. You know, in one of the books that I was a part of this summer, my unhabit was that judgment stops all love. Mm. And that's just basically what you said, Jeannie, is that judgment stops all love, not only for other people, but especially, I love that you brought that up for the self. I wrote that down because that was so good. I think that's such an important piece of what you're talking about with happiness, because we have to get to that point where we just have complete self-acceptance, and not to be that we can't improve and grow and learn and expand, but that we understand that we are perfect just as we are, and that we are here for a reason, and there is meaning to each aspect of growth and learning and mistakes and wins and all of those things.
You reminded me of another favorite quote. You're perfect just as you are, and you can use a little improvement. And that's where we should be. You know, we accept ourselves. But yes, every day there's something I can always do to be better tomorrow than I am today. And if I'm engaged in that, that's very uplifting. And that can happen all through the entire life cycle, here, right to the very end. There's something I can do tomorrow that's an improvement on where I am today. And,
yeah, I agree.
And I also think, too, when we focus on looking at how amazing we are and then looking at what we can do to take that next level, it takes our focus on needing to find fault with other people based on insecurity. You know, because if I look at Matt, there's some facts I know anatomy and physiology wise. I know that if I were to read the blueprint of you, one character at a time, you are so intricately woven that it would take me 96 years reading nonstop day and night just to read a description of you. If I were to take Jill's DNA and stretch it out end to end, she'd give me enough to go back to the moon 6,000 times. We are really incredibly put together in a divine way. And when we can accept that amazing part about ourselves, in addition to the saying, hey, I'm also learning to the gift of imperfection. I'm learning where I'm imperfect. I'm learning to show up wholehearted. And I'm learning to bring people who are strong where I'm not next to me. Mm. Now, there's a recipe for something.
We need to put that in the formula. We should think about that. Yeah, why don't we
do that?
Let's think about that. Let's take a quick commercial break. And we were going to have some good answers when we come back after that one, Jeannie.
Are you ready to be ageless and live limitless? Unlock your codes of longevity and discover how to age in reverse. Look and feel years younger. Perform at your peak and express boundless energy, vitality, and joy. This and so much more is possible because it's no longer a question of if we're living longer. We are living longer. The question is, how well do you want to live beginning today so that you can flourish and thrive at any age and any stage of life? This book brings together more than 20 of today's health and longevity leaders to share with you the secrets that exist within so that you truly can unlock your code and you can live your long life well beginning today. So now is your time to go to codesoflongevity.com to order your copy so that you truly can look, feel, and live life optimized to 120 and beyond.
And we are back with Mr. Happy, Matt Gersper. At happyliving.com, you can find all about him and some of his comrades that he's brought along on the journey. So we were just talking about being fearfully and wonderfully made and how intricately woven we are and how if we learn to accept that, our amazingness, we can also accept our flaws and show up more wholehearted. Is that... I don't know what you guys are seeing in your parts of the world with your people, but when I see something missing, when I do leadership training a lot and people say, what's the most important leadership lesson you can provide for me? And I said, it's probably not what you think it's going to be. Work on you. Mm. Work on you, because if you get you down well, you're going to not need to get from the other so you can show up and be available.
Absolutely. And I think also tell the truth. And so as you're working on yourself, be true. You know, you bring some of that in too at the end of your course, Matt, which I looked at with the personal responsibility, the Kaizen, the careful, carefree diligence, all of those things. So talk to us some about that.
Well, personal responsibility is like huge. And one of the posts I wrote is about your pants not fitting anymore. And how often does somebody say, my pants don't fit me anymore? As if the pants changed. The pants don't fit me. It's the pants' fault. No, it's not the pants' fault. It's your fault. And so that's fine. You might just, you know, just solve the problem. Don't complain about it, but either lose weight or buy bigger pants. Either one's fine. Back to you, Jeannie. It's not about judging. You know, fine, get bigger and then accept that you're bigger and roll with it. That's all perfectly fine. But personal personal responsibility, that's the capacity part. If you don't take personal responsibility to care for yourself in a manner that is suitable to you, and that can be different for all of us, right? My manner might be very, very low, living in the woods, you know, low impact on the world. And another person's might be living in a mansion, you know, with gold everywhere. Both of those are fine. Just understand what you want in life. And if you create the capacity to take care of that and take care of your family and friends and have more to give to others, you're going to be perfectly fine. And then it's again back to the guy in the woods shouldn't be judging the guy in the castle, or vice versa. Both are completely acceptable ways to be on the earth, especially if when you're in the castle and when you're in the woods, you're managing your life in such a way that you also can give to others to lift them and help them become who they're supposed to be in their lives.
Explain to us what Kaizen is.
Kaizen is one of my favorite words in the history of words. It's a Japanese term. I stumbled upon it, probably 30 years ago. I was in Southern California on a business trip in businesses long, long, long ago. And I was in the lobby of this business. I was getting ready to go to a meeting, and I picked up a magazine and I'm flipping through it. And it was all about back when the Japanese were kicking Detroit's ass in automobiling. And the way they were doing it was this process of Kaizen, which means you've also probably heard of, what's the black belt term? I forget. Anyways, doesn't matter. But Kaizen means small incremental steps add up over time to yield big results. I thought about that. Wow, that's really powerful. I can do something small, like 5 years ago or so, I learned that eating sauerkraut is really good for the gut biome. I thought, okay, well, I'm into health and wellness, but I hate sauerkraut. And of course, I haven't had sauerkraut in 30 or 40 years.
And you've never had mine, but continue.
And I never had yours, okay. But so I thought what I'd do is I'd go buy some organic sauerkraut. And when I did that, I tasted it and said, huh, I don't hate it. So it was an old taste bud situation. It was an old belief that I had that no longer was relevant. And even if I didn't like it, I've changed that. I don't need to like everything I eat. If it helps me, you know, serves me, I can stand a little bit of distaste. That would be fine. But I liked it. And so I just brought that into my life. And I added something to Kaizen that's my own spin. It's Kaizen, because a lot of people do small incremental steps all the time. Mm-hmm. And then they give it back. They lose the 5 pounds, or they stop buying the sauerkraut, or they don't do that thing that they knew was going to improve their life. And for whatever reason, again, I'm wired weird and differently, I don't like giving anything back. It's hard to change your life. So I add Kaizen and hold. If you're going to do something that you think is better for you and you bring it into your life, keep it. Don't give it back. In physical fitness, if it's been told to me, and I don't know if it's true or not, but it doesn't really make any difference. If you take a week off of your training, you lose 3 weeks worth of progress. So it just doesn't make sense. It's just not smart. It's not efficient to give it back. And so that's what Kaizen is to me. And it's great because you don't have to boil the ocean. You just need to do small things and keep bringing them into your life one after another, and up your life just changes. And all of a sudden you say, huh, I don't know why I feel so good. Well, there's a reason, because you've been doing small incremental steps and you've added up over time and you've got big results 15 years later, even though you wanted them, you know, 15 years ago.
Have you noticed anything different in your world of happy and your business of happy? Have you noticed anything different post-COVID versus pre-COVID?
Not really. COVID was an interesting, one of the things that happened during COVID is I got called early on by a friend of mine who's a podcaster and says, Matt, we're bringing together a group of experts and we're going to talk about how we're all dealing with COVID. And I thought, well, I'm not an expert. Anything has to do with COVID, but I love to talk. And if you let me be on your air, okay, give me the weekend to think about how I'm dealing with COVID. And I came up with this acronym, PANIC. And it was perspective, keep things in perspective. And, you know, there is a disconnect between how the media is perceived, is running with COVID and what's happening in the world. And I don't want to make a judgment one way or the other, but I'm just saying for you, for me, keep perspective. So learn about what, and one of the ways I think about perspective is I look around and I say, well, my life hasn't changed. So I'm not going to freak out about things if my life hasn't changed. And I have another philosophy that's tied to that. If I'm not willing or able to change something, I'm not going to invest a lot of my energy into it. And even if I am able to change something, if I'm not willing to do it, I'm not willing to spend the money on it, then I really can't anchor all my crap into it and ruin my life because of it. So without saying that you should take it super duper seriously or not seriously at all, keep it in your perspective. Adapt. I took the early on approach that, hey, it's just the flu. And it got worse and worse and worse. I said, hey, dude, it's not just the flu. There's something going on here. So I really had to adapt my thinking. And we have, and we've hunkered down and we've tried to be very respectful with it. And then in nest. So one of the great things that COVID did for us is it forced us to come into our habitats and we were stuck here. So try to make them better. And that's uplifting. So I started doing things that made our nest better and more effective and more fulfilling and more happy for us. I invest in your building your immune system. That's one thing. Learn about what your immune system is and then invest in making it better. And that's going to serve you for the rest of your life, even when COVID's dead and gone. But also invest in finances, in the stock market. The stock market, as you might remember, it just tanked. And what people do when it tanks, they panic and they sell. And then they bring those losses in, they make them permanent. If you know what I did, I didn't sell a thing.
You bought.
I didn't lose a thing. And if you could buy, yes, buy. It was the time to buy. So invest was an important one. And then the last one was calm. You know, just add a level of calmness to your life, because good, bad, or indifferent, it is what it is. And so, you know, take it with some measure of calm. And so COVID opened up interesting doors and interesting perspectives. And my larger thought on it is, like most big disruptions, it's going to create bad outcomes, and it already has lots and lots of hundreds of thousands of them, millions of them across the globe, but it's going to create a lot of good outcomes also. The way we handle crisis, the way we handle disease, all the learning that's gone on, the massive acceleration of technology, and figured out, you know, some of that will be used for good, some for bad. So in the big scheme of things, it hasn't changed much for me. But it's highlighted some things, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's beautiful. I love that to really, my favorite of those things is perspective. And then also to choose what you invest your time in and your energy and your money, and then to center, you know, to connect with yourself and to choose to calm down those feelings and to look at things carefully and make the decisions that are best for you, you know, as a unique individual. I love that.
And the modern world we live in, and the big, for me, the big damage that happened with COVID, manufactured damage, was counting deaths and having the tracker. If we had the tracker on cancer, if we had the tracker on automobile accidents, if we could just scare ourselves from ever leaving and doing anything.
Oh, no doubt.
People die every day. And the problem is, when it's on my screen and it's in my life and I see the torture that happened to this little girl in India, and it's played over and over and over, and then, of course, I feel horrible. But you have to recognize that that was happening before we had mass media, and it didn't affect you at all.
That's correct.
So that you just have to deal with. And for me, I cannot invest and I cannot curl up into a ball because of that tragedy that happened over there. I can't. Now, I can be moved by it. And if I'm moved by it and I do something here to be uplifting and to give back, that's how I deal with it. And I don't know if it's right or wrong, but I know I can't solve that problem.
You know, one of my favorite books has a verse in it that says, "Do not conform to this world's patterns, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." And I find that what I put in my mind is pretty powerful. And when I put less of the news in, I'm doing a heck of a lot better.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I can't change certain things, but I can impact what's around me in a positive manner and within me.
Yeah. And you can use that bad stuff as a motivator to do something extra. Give extra, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it inspires you to think in different ways. You know, when you choose that, choose to use it for something good.
The heartbreak for me, I mean, I think I live in a big, beautiful place on a lake, and we have our food, you know, brought in, and it was, our life didn't really change. I can't feel guilty about that, but my heart goes out to the families that are in an apartment, four or five or six of them. They're both trying to work and they're all trying to school. And my original heartbreak went out to, because I was an athlete, all the athletes that were training for their senior year in high school or college, yeah, or their big events, and they couldn't do it, or they couldn't go to their graduations, or they couldn't be married. So, I mean, this thing has been so terribly disruptive for so many people. And that part just is, you know, in addition to the deaths, but the human, oh, it's just been awful. It's really just been awful. And I'm looking forward to 2021. We can get out and touch and hug and have some fun.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That's music to my ears. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to look at ways, because my life didn't change drastically, but it did change on one level. And that is, I used to travel a fair amount for my job, and I don't travel anymore. So my life is on Zoom meetings or, you know, that kind of thing all day long. So that has been different. And I don't mind it. I've gotten used to it, but I still have to have that people connection. So not this weekend, but the next 2 weekends straight in a row after that, I got plenty of that. I got some stuff I'm doing downtown volunteering. And then the weekend after that, I'm with Jill on a nonstop agenda.
Cool.
Yes, it's going to be so much fun, because I think one of the things that for me, my passion in life has always been human connection and what you can learn from that and how much richer your life is. I mean, even look like my connection with you, Matt, when I met you, I was like, wow, he has such an amazing formula for happiness, and this course you're putting together too. So tell us a little bit about that and when that's going to be available, because I think people really need right now some tools and some things that they can use to catalyze, to use this situation as a catalyst to create more good in the world, more happiness, more connection. So tell us a little bit about
All right. Well, I'm really super excited about it. This is my mind map of the course. And it's already live. We've got some auditors going through it. Jill's going through it. And the catalyst for it was I got invited to speak at a MedFit conference. It's a group of medical practitioners, health and wellness practitioners. And they wanted to talk about my triangle. I wrote a book on it called The Belief Roadmap. And then also to do a session on my second book called Turning Inspiration into Action. And so that was great. And so I've been working on those. And then they said, would you do an eight week course, an 8 week workshop for us? And I thought, yeah, I guess, yeah, that'd be great. Of course I will. And so I started thinking about what that would look like. And as I imagined all of the content that it was going to take, I said, well, shoot, if I'm going to do this, I need to put it in my terms, I need to put it in a can so it can be used over and over and over again. One of the highlights of my business learning is create information once and use it over and over and over again.
Now and you're so talking.
That's what I did with my course. And so I already decided I was going to make an e-course, but I also had committed to do a regular workshop that I figured they were going to make me do on Zoom and one at a time, which would have been fine and it would have been good feedback. But when I got into it and I started putting my program together, I asked, you know, what if we turn this into an e-course? Would that be okay for you? And they said, that'd be awesome. So actually I only have to do it once instead of twice, which is great. And so I started thinking about, well, what would I say? And with mind mapping, you always put, you know, the most important thing in the middle. And what I wrote in the middle was the philosophy of you and your inspired life. And I changed it quite a few times and I took out philosophy and I thought, no, I want to leave philosophy in because my first book, The Belief Roadmap, is all about if you don't know what your philosophies are for your life, then you're going to be using somebody else's. And if you're using somebody else's philosophy for your life, you're not going to be happy. I'll guarantee you that. You can't become an attorney because your family is a whole bunch of attorneys when you're really a jazz musician dying inside. You've got to be the jazz musician. Now, you might need to do law to pay for things, but you've got to be a jazz musician. So I want people to think about what is their philosophy of their life. And then the second component is inspired, in spirit. And I'm learning so much that that's the gig. If you figure out who you are going to move mountains. And so the course is 8 weeks. The first week is exploring inspiration. The second week is exploring priority. The third week is exploring power. The fourth week is making space. That's the big miss that most people have when they bring things into their life. You got to get rid of stuff that you're already doing to make space for your change. The fifth one is earthly energy, and that's about capacity that we've talked about. But I learned the capacity that I'm talking about there is finite energy. If I exercise and I get stronger and then I expend that strength, I need to replenish it with sleep or food. And so if I spend money out of my financial fitness, I've got to replace that. It's finite energy, earthly energy. And when I get into, so that's week five, when I get into purpose, that's spiritual energy and that's infinite. If I love something and I put more love into it, I still have all the love I started with and maybe more. It's infinite. So that's the gig. If you can spend your life in spirit, that's why people don't run out of energy. That's why when you first fall in love, you're just on fire. That's your spirit. And if you can find a way to live there, it's very, very, very cool.
Wow.
Week seven, I stumbled. I first called it taking action. Then I changed it to adjusting life. Then I changed it to making halftime adjustments. And then as I was trying to figure out with each course, I've got blog posts for you to read to support an hour long lecture. I've got videos to support. I've got poems and quotes to support all of them. I call it reading and viewing and pondering and listening and homeworking. And when I got into week seven, I found a post that I'd written about Dr. Wayne Dyer's death. I forget what the name of the post is, but it was about, he said he didn't want to die with the music left in him. And it was very moving for me to write that post. And I realized that I had highlighted a film that he had made called The Shift about 10 years earlier. And I read that, I watched the movie again that I hadn't seen in several years. And it talks about moving from the morning of ambition to the afternoon of meaning in your life. And that's the shift from ambition to meaning. And I was watching the movie with the context of this whole thing, and I had tears in my eyes, and I'm saying, that week is now called The Shift. And that's the big trick, is shifting your mindset. And then the last one, 8, is Kaizen-ing your life. So.
Oh, that is so good, Matt. And tell us again, where people can go to sign up for that course, because they are going to kick us off the air.
Just go to happyliving.com. It's live right now, but it's not on the site, but it will be on the site in weeks. It's just going to, the e-course will show up there. And the first week is free. And if you love it, then you can enroll when you get to the end of the first week and take the rest of it. We're saying it's only $300. And my promise to anybody who takes it, $300, and you put in 30 hours of work, and your life will never be the same, I guarantee it, you can have your money back if it doesn't change your life.
Oh, that is so amazing. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. What a life-giving conversation. That's what we look forward to every week, is connecting with people like you who are making the world so much better place. So thank you so much.
Thank you both. It's a pleasure to be here with you.